So you got to figure out the exchange rate of Pop-Tarts to pain, you know, the Pop-Tarts to injury ratio. Mm-hmm. And that's what you use. You hit by a car, that's about 18 Pop-Tarts, I would say, probably.
That's not
maybe at least 18 boxes of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 235 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
Wow, you're getting so fast. Yeah. I'm Adam, and I can't speak that fast.
I'm already done.
Today is still November 16, 2019. It's the same day we recorded last week's episode. Time is... Running out.
Also was recorded like a week before. This is all very,
very confusing.
The future is don't even look at it. Don't look at it now.
Before we get started, we have a warning. We're going to swear. Let's go.
Well, first we need to give a special thanks.
We need a shout out to Quantum Anomaly and Giant Muskrat, who brought us
booze,
butterscotch moonshine,
and it's basically butterscotch schnapps.
And Big Pete, what is this?
Whiskey.
Scotch whiskey.
Which we have not tapped into until this very special occasion where we are recording two podcast episodes in the same day. Mm-hmm. And so we did it.
Yep.
Let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. First question is a series of questions from Beaky Bop and Boop.
Oh boy. Are we going to hit them one at a time? Like you're going to bust it up?
Let's just get in there and see what happens.
Okay.
All right, Beaky Baba Boop says, these are some quick questions for Questionpocalypse 2019. First question, are zombies or vampires more terrifying?
Zombies.
Fast zombies or slow zombies?
There's no, because, so vampires.
Fast zombies are the most terrifying of all the things.
Yeah, 100%. Vampires are only somewhat scary because there's so many questions about just how sexy they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Because if you see them, you don't know if they're going to seduce you or eat you.
Exactly. And if they seduce you, now you're just immortal and you also bite people. So it's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, you do it in a sexual way.
Yeah, there's no sexy zombies.
Exactly.
I don't think you ever see like a teen, adult teen novel. iZombie
kind of has that though.
What was the? Oh, that's true. There are sexy zombies.
Was it
the one? Not very many.
There's no,
Was it the one where the zombie falls in love with someone? There was a movie that came out a while ago. It's called Cold Bodies.
Oh, I don't know.
Warm Bodies, I think is what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's a zombie love story.
It's a zombie love story. Yeah. He's actually a zombie, and he just falls in love with a real person and a not dead person.
I think vampires are more terrifying because they have agency.
Yeah.
You know, zombies.
They can come for you on purpose.
A vampire can formulate a schema and come get you. And a zombie is just kind of out there. You know, they're shambling.
It's like the weather.
Yeah. A zombie, and if you've seen The Walking Dead, you know, they just kind of cluster in herds and shit like that. And you just kind of leave if zombies show up. But a vampire, they're going to get you.
And they can fly.
And they can turn into a bat, which I think we can all agree is pretty dope.
That's pretty spooky.
Yeah, that's mostly awesome. That's back in the sexy category.
I think that's what it is. Like vampires. Yeah, vampires are just too hot, you know? Yeah,
too hot.
Zombies are definitely spooky.
I'm going to need some more of this.
get some more of that moonshine going.
This is so gross. This butterscotch flavored moonshine is not good.
No.
Quantum. This is not good. I'm going to pour myself.
Read the next question while you get
Quantum
that
actually brought this to us at last year, 2 years ago at Shenanicon.
Yeah, the first ever Shenanicon.
If I recall correctly, and I'm very sorry if I'm wrong about this.
No, it's 100% true.
But I'm pretty sure he said, I was driving up here, stopped at a gas station to get gas because that's, you know, what you have to do on a road trip. And then I saw in the gas station this Ozark Distillery Butterscotch Moonshine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to the Shenanicon, you know, butterscotch,
perfect et cetera. Time.
Perfect timing. And so he bought this thing and brought it. And I say all of that only to say it was not expected that this would necessarily be a high-end.
The most top tier of butterscotch flavored moonshine that you might get. But it's up there.
Yeah.
It is still drinkable in the sense that it's drinkable.
I think it's perfectly fine.
You really gotta go for it though. Mm-hmm. All right, next question comes from favorite snack made out of potatoes.
That's the name.
Sorry. Next question. Next question is
okay.
What's your favorite
sense.
Snack made out of potatoes?
I would say fries.
That'd be a good username.
Is it a snack? That's a lot of grease for a snack.
I think it's a snack. What's your definition of a snack? You know what I'm saying?
That's a great question, Sam.
Because is it about the quantity of food or is it just the kind of food? Because I think it's sort of a combination.
If you have tiny hamburgers, are those a snack?
I think sliders are snacks.
I think tater tots are a snack.
And then fries are definitely a snack if you believe tater tots are a snack.
That's probably true.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Actually, wait. What am I doing? What am I saying? Chips. Potato chips, obviously. That's a snack.
Yeah. But is that the only thing that is obviously both potatoes and a snack?
Yes. I think so.
Or a candied yam. That's a good snack.
The whole yam.
It's true. It's basically a bag of potato chips. Like, it's not that dense calorically versus a sack of potato chips is equivalent to eating a yam, essentially.
Yeah. Or any regular size meal, pretty much.
That's true.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's the case that potato-based foods just aren't snacks because they're so calorie dense that they're just a meal no matter what it is. So now that that's true, then the question is just, what's your favorite potato-based food?
Well, you got gnocchi, which is when potatoes are going undercover as pasta.
Yeah, potato noodles.
What?
Is that actually true?
Yeah, gnocchi is made of potatoes.
Okay.
The hell are you talking about?
You drink your moonshine.
Shut up.
So, yeah, there's gnocchi, and then you got your chips, and then you got your fries.
And then you got your British chips, which are actually fries again.
Yes. And you have French fries.
Which are not French.
Not French, but are fries.
Yes. And chips.
Yes.
Can you make pizza out of potatoes?
You could make bread out of potatoes. You can make
And pizza is just bread.
Yeah, you could probably make whatever you want out of potatoes.
Then that's my favorite snack.
Pizza.
Potato pizza?
A pizza made out of potatoes. Next question from the Beaky Bappa Boop catalog.
Ooh, I love it.
Is y'all have any non-butterscotch art hanging around the office?
I don't even know if we have butterscotch art.
We do. We got a flux. We don't have any
hanging, I guess.
We don't have any non-butterscotch art. You know why? Because we don't want it.
Nope.
That's correct.
We've got all butter. Actually, these are all Eric Hibbler things, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's all box art stuff.
Yeah.
So that's that. Next Beaky Bappa Boop question. Escalator, elevator, stairs, or tractor beam? I assume he means latching onto an I-beam being pulled by a tractor.
Being drugged to your destination.
Because we can only talk about real modes of transportation. Yes. So,
yeah.
Has to be that.
Tractor beam is somewhat impractical for just general moving around. Also,
unless you're on a farm.
Unless you're on a farm.
Yeah, that's very quick.
Yeah.
Even then, though, you might as well just drive the tractor. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Like, you don't really need to stand on the beam being dragged behind it. Although, because tractors only really seat one or two people, that if you wanted to have like a sort of a bus route.
It's like a hayride.
Yeah, it's like a hayride.
But come sit on the tractor beam.
That actually sounds weirdly plausible for a sort of farm activity, given the things
just dragging an I-beam
and riding on it, just standing on it.
Yeah.
Hoping it doesn't roll over and crush you.
I feel like if you put up a sign on the highway that said, tractor beam rides $5. You could get some suckers in there.
I mean, I don't even know if they're suckers at that point.
Maybe like a good time. Come in, sit on the I-beam, get dragged behind a tractor.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope.
Otherwise, I think it depends on where you're trying to go. You know, the one thing I hate about escalators is that I can never figure out where I need to go to return from whence I came, right? Because it only goes one direction.
And then they've always got the downward escalator in some weird dark corner somewhere else.
Is it on the other side?
Yes. So you go up and then you're like, how? Do I get back down? And that's just too much.
But escalators are the most effective at being able to break and still be a mode of transportation.
This is true.
They are
resilient transportation technologies.
Yeah.
But also elevators technically put you back down on the ground.
When they break.
If they break. They just do it very hard. But they may just put you down.
I learned a lot about elevators one day. I read a bunch about elevator safety.
Mm-hmm.
Elevators are the safest mode of transportation in the world.
Is that based on how many people use them?
Yeah, in terms of distance traveled.
I think for me, I'm just surprised that they count as a mode of transportation. I feel like that's a very lenient definition. You know what I mean?
I mean, you were somewhere and now you're somewhere else.
But like you're comparing an elevator to like a plane.
Or to going up the stairs or an escalator, you know. Are stairs a mode of transportation? Yeah.
I don't think so. I think stairs allow for you to use your own mode of transportation, which is walking.
Yeah. They aren't a mode of transportation. They're
a road of transportation.
That's right. All right. Next question is, what is 6 times 9?
54, probably.
Yeah, 54.
For some reason, I was going to say 72, but that's definitely not.
That's 9 times 8.
That's definitely not right.
Oh my God.
Don't you remember your multiplication tables? Also, I crushed those in third grade. They were like, all right, you're going to need to memorize all these. And I was like, done. I did it already.
Do people do that still?
Probably.
Or are the teachers like, all right, but open up your multiplication app on your iPhone. And here's remember which app to use to do multiplication.
Everybody, here's how you ask Siri what two numbers times.
I still have that problem when I'm doing tips now because I haven't had to just add digits together a lot, just sort of mentally, except for when I go out and I have to give a tip at a restaurant.
That is the main thing.
Yeah. And so it's like if you put like a weird one on there. So now I always just try to like round it so it ends up in just a zero.
Yeah, I make it really easy. I always just round it up to something I can divide by 10 and then multiply by 2.
But every so often they give you like, they're like, here's the breakdown, like 15, 20%, whatever, right? Yeah. And then I sometimes just pick the number in there and then I'm like, oh God.
Yeah, then you got to round that one because you can't add it together. Yeah, it is remarkably – because if you wanted to maximize how many tips you were getting, right? If you just only computed 20% and included what the total would be if somebody gave you 20%, everybody would just do that.
It's basically a convenience fee
for doing the math.
Yeah. Nobody wants to do that math. It just takes all – and then you're like sitting there staring at it while everybody else is talking.
That's what I love on Square. They just like – when they turn the thing around and there's just three choices. Yeah, 15%, 20%, and you're like, that one.
Yeah. It makes me always want to give 20% because I was like, this was so easy.
So easy, so good.
If they said – yeah, they said 20% or do the math yourself and type in how much you need to give 15%.
Because you still can. You can still put in anything you want.
Yeah, every time you'd be like, fuck it, 20. I don't know.
Yep. Well, there's that idea from that Algorithms to Live By book, which is the idea of computational kindness, right? Which is when you're – and it's kind of like what we talked about with project-based emailing and all this other stuff, which is whenever you're interacting with someone or you're building something for someone, reduce the mental overhead that they have to deal with in terms of giving you what you need, you know? So if I want a tip, I just want to press a button. Tell me what the total is. Tell me what the whole thing is.
Or just circle a number that's already there.
That's true. How come they're not just telling you the total that goes along with that tip?
What the hell is that about?
I don't know.
Somebody find that happened. There was one restaurant I went to recently that had that. It's the only time I've ever seen it. I've never seen it since.
Isn't there I think there's one big restaurant in New York City that was on the news.
Because they have no tips.
Because they don't do tips. They're like, hey, we just genuinely pay our staff a decent amount of money.
Well, so that's
pretty wild.
That's a very good point, which is that it's weird.
Also, I don't know how we landed here.
Where the price looks a certain way, but actually isn't the price because the restaurant's underpaying the staff.
And your taxes aren't prefigured into it. Because you go anywhere else and the tax is already wrapped into the cost.
They say this is 10 euros and it is.
Yeah. If you got 10 euros, you can have that thing now.
Mm-hmm. You can have it now.
Yep.
Instead of being like, I'd like to buy that. They're like, just kidding. It's 11. Euros now.
Also, just
kidding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, we don't pay our employees, so you have to do that now.
You're like, what?
What would you say you do here? We don't calculate the taxes. We don't pay our people. We're just moving products through.
It's capitalism, baby.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from B-Scotch Christine.
It's inside the house.
Since Adam and Sam both just got new phones, has the chocolate demon returned?
We actually had this very conversation.
And we did because I have no headphone jack.
Yeah.
The chocolate demon.
Can't get into Sam's phone.
We got to do a throwback because what we got to make sure people know about the parable and perils.
What is it? There was a period of time where seemingly every day, seemingly, at least in my recollection, Sam would just appear with himself or some item of his covered in chocolate.
It was just happening. I don't know what was going on. It's a rough. I was going through a rough patch.
It was off in his phone, and I remember. He got
it in your headphones.
I apparently was at some point in my day placing chocolates in my pockets. Now the thing I'm concerned about, which is always a mistake, is I did put chocolate in my lunch bag today.
Oh no!
And I'm just thinking about it. I didn't eat it at lunch.
So where is it?
Where is it?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about this now, and I'm hoping I didn't put it in my damn pocket.
It's in your phone.
Yeah, so the chocolate demon has not struck me yet. And part of the benefit of having this new iPhone is it has no 8mm jack.
It's got no ports at all.
People are making fun of them for their courage to remove that thing.
This is the real reason.
And I think it's weird that they didn't actually use that as part of their advertising strategy to say,
Tim Cook got hit by the chocolate demon one day and he was like,
never again.
No more.
Yeah. And all they had to do was say that. They were so weird about it and cagey about it.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh, we had the courage.
Just be real.
Nobody wants to admit that they stuffed their pocket full of chocolates and then dunked their iPhone in there. Even certainly. Tim Cook.
Yeah.
Tim Cook doesn't want to go on stage with a pants covered in chocolate. And then he's like, yeah, hey, has ever happened to you? You dunk your phone in a big bucket of chocolate in your pocket.
Like, what? Tim? What are you talking about?
Tim, get your shit together.
Yeah.
All right, next question comes from Irish Luck. What is the point of pointers?
To point.
Depends what kind of pointers we're talking about.
German short-haired pointers.
German short-hairs. There's a lot of different kinds of pointers.
There's lots of pointers.
So let's go through the list. So if you got German short-hair pointer.
They find ducks for you.
They find ducks for you. And then they just point at them.
Which is really
convenient. Now it's your problem. German short-hair pointer is like, I'm not dealing with this fucking duck. This is your problem.
Yeah, but, you know, as we know from DevOps, part of the process is making the work visible. Yeah. And so that's a German short-hair pointer is sort of that.
Make the work visible.
Makes the work
visible. It's the dog version of make the work visible.
100%. Okay, so we got those pointers out of the way. Now you got laser pointers. Okay, what are those for? Blinding the police during riots, which is what's happening in Chile right now. So,
it's a very fantastic tool
for that. You can also disable drone sensors with them. You can blind.
Shoot missiles down if you got a powerful enough one.
Yep.
You can also blind airline pilots and then get arrested.
That's also
a great option.
Yeah, don't point your laser pointer in the sky. They will actually come for you.
They'll get you.
Because it's super fucking dangerous.
You can use them to trick cats.
Also that.
So you can also
thinking something. What does the cat think is happening?
You can also create a PowerPoint presentation that is too complicated. Okay, in terms of the slide structure.
So you had to point at parts of it.
Then use
you got to point at the PowerPoint.
Yeah, laser parts wand. Of the PowerPoint.
Exactly. Right.
So usually if you're having to use a pointer during a PowerPoint presentation, you have gone too far. Okay, I'm going to back it up.
Way too much shit going on that slide.
Yep.
If you got to point at it, it's over. You're sunk.
Then you have memory pointers in computer science?
Yeah, there's no point to those. So
I mean, it's to point.
Yeah.
The point is to point.
Yep.
If you're like, where is that? Pointer's like, there
it is. Yeah.
Right there. There it is.
That's the whole thing.
And then there's points, which is a whole other thing.
It is.
But are points a kind of pointer?
I fucking love the fact that people call the objective of a game points.
Because, what's the point?
What's the point of this game?
It's to get the points.
Well, I've never even thought about it.
You want to earn the most points because that's the point of the game.
I bet that started off as a joke. That had to have started off as a joke. Because it used to be score.
Yeah.
Or it is scored.
What's the point of this? To get the most score.
Yeah.
The highest score. The score is the point.
I'm trying to think of what that conversation had to have been like for that to be. Because it's like.
Somebody had that conversation.
Because you had to discover that it was possible for point to be plural. You know? Like in this.
What's the point of this? What are the points? Because
ask what's the point.
It's like tallies, right?
But now you'd ask what are the points, which doesn't even. That's not even like a coherent sentence, but somehow you had to land on that question to then just be able to call the thing points.
Weird.
Points, yes. Points, but weirdly, points are not the point. Points are just the outcome of measuring the performance, you know?
KPI. Yeah.
Like, the point of the game is to do better at moving the ball into that square area,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And once you do that, then you get the points. The points aren't the point. The point was to move the ball, but now you got the points. So now you know
mm-hmm.
that you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm fuzzy on that, but
I think that's fair.
It's close enough.
Next question comes from Sevencho, who says, what is your favorite or most impactful PC peripheral, i.e. giant mouse pad, fourth monitor, huge cloud-covered cans?
Headphones?
My favorite one is just noise canceling headphones. Game changer.
By and far.
Bose Quiet Comfort 25s.
I didn't even know that you were making words for the first piece of that. Bose Quiet Comfort. Anyways, I think that they're fantastic.
That's probably the best investment.
Those I was very dubs about.
Especially given their cost.
Yeah, because they're $300?
Yeah, they're a lot of cash money.
And I was like, I've been buying headphones for $20 my whole life.
It seemed to be perfectly fine.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of conversations we have about food.
Yeah, right.
Where I'm like, why would I ever pay $100 for a steak? Mm-hmm. And then you do it and you're like, oh, that's why. Because some steaks are just that good, mm-hmm. right? And so, yeah, these headphones, man. They're
order of magnitude different than
– Yeah, right? it changes the experience playing video games. It changes work. Yeah.
Especially changes being on an airplane.
Yes.
Because what noise-canceling headphones do, which is the craziest shit I've ever heard of, is –
Or haven't heard of.
is – okay, so sound waves are a vibration, right?
Okay, with you.
They're a wave. It goes up, then down, right? So noise-canceling headphones, they look at the sound.
With their eyes.
With their headphone eyes. And they're like, fuck you, sound. I'm going to go down, then up.
Mm-hmm.
Down, then up. So they literally make a noise-canceling noise.
It's a counter-frequency.
They make a vibration that deletes the other vibrations.
This is some of that stuff where I'm like, I don't really understand how anything works.
Sounds like a healing crystal kind of situation.
Uh-huh.
Except
it works.
Yeah, legit, you'll hear like an air conditioner or a fucking truck moving outside or something, and you flip the little switch on your headphones, it's just gone now.
Yeah. Or at least way quieter, depending on how loud it is.
Yeah. It doesn't really do a good job of deleting bursts of noise.
For example, well, it's actually the fun thing is that if you're on a loud airplane or we've also done them in convention halls when we're like trying to take a break, you know? So you put those things on and all the ambient noise that's just kind of like recurring and, you know, just humming along just gets cut like in half or in three quarters, whatever, depending on how loud it is. But you can still hear everything else.
Yeah.
So it just kind of
cuts out the noise.
Yeah, it cuts out the noise.
Cancels the noise.
Weird.
Yeah. It's not sound canceling.
Yeah, if you
know, noise canceling.
If you treat yourself to a thing for this holiday season.
Yeah, noise canceling.
Get yourself high-end
noise canceling headphones.
Yeah. Great. Man. Easily the best thing.
They probably are. And I know that the tech is old as fuck, right? Because it's true for all audio stuff. Like, I don't think the tech has changed in any of audio for 100 years.
I think it kind of peaked in the 70s, probably. Yeah.
As in, like, you know, you mean, like, by tech, you mean
like microphones, speakers, you know, they just how work it works the same right. way. You know?
Yeah, I think the best sounding thing to ever be made was Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. And then
just still.
We've never surpassed that.
Nope. So I'm pretty sure there are also some still really good but not as expensive headphones on the market now. But the only ones we know that we've actually used that were also like the best rated by according to everybody were these fancy Bose ones.
Yes. So. And nice thing is I actually used mine so much that the foamy ear pad part exploded and I ordered a new set of those parts and you can just like pop them off and replace them.
I need to do that because mine actually did that too.
Yeah. You can refresh them. It's great. And now I got another 20 years.
I mean, we wear these things for 4 to 6 hours a day, every day.
Yeah. But if you do this, you must get a battery recharger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they do take batteries.
Though some of the newer ones are, you just charge them with USB.
But now you got to use your USB port. Who has the time?
Who has the time for that? It's crazy.
All right. Next question comes from Calm Zippa Aid Sand. How do you make nice looking GIFs? Mine are all blurry or huge.
GIFs are annoying to make. And this is largely because there's a bunch of weird settings and stuff that you have to flip on and off. On either the program you're using or
you just flip them all off and then carry on.
So we use a thing called Screen to GIF. Okay.
It's good.
It's really good. We used to use a thing called GIF Cam, but it wasn't quite as easy to manipulate. So Screen to GIF, you set the size of the window and then you record and then you can, in post, basically shrink down the image. You can cut out colors. You can do all sorts of stuff. And the important thing is that sometimes it depends on why your GIF doesn't look good. So I don't even know. Like, I'm not sure.
If it's blurry, it's probably because you captured a blurry thing. Quit doing that, you weirdo.
That's exactly why. Maybe you're down-resing it when you capture it or something weird.
Yeah, stop that.
Just stop it.
Just capture the GIF and quit being weird about it.
Yeah, a lot of it just has to do with what the settings are that you're using on the program before you capture it. So if you're not quite sure what it is, then get one of the easier ones to use, like Screen to GIF. Watch like a 5-minute tutorial. Do it, and that's done.
Do it.
Nice.
Do it. Screen to GIF, do it. And then there's one other thing. Which is GIFs do this, I don't know
pixel how to, detection. Change pixel detection.
Yeah. So the way that they cut down on their file size is they're like, oh, this one pixel was blue and it's still blue for the next 28 frames or whatever. So I'm just going to not record the rest of the frames and just leave it as is, right? And for some absolutely ludicrous reason that I can't fathom, a lot of GIF software says – I'm going to make sure that you know that I didn't change that pixel.
By turning it bright green.
By turning it bright green. Why?
Yeah, I'm very unclear what the purpose of that
is. So you can check that box on Screen to GIF and say, hey, don't turn my unchanged pixels bright green. In fact, don't change them.
Yes.
They're supposed to be unchanged.
That would help you. So if that's the reason why, then yeah, uncheck that box.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from also from Persevin Show. It's said that some comedians like to self-amuse. Do you do things when at home when at home or alone just for your own amusement?
Yes. I constantly talk and make fun of my dog, but in like a super kind voice, you know? No one else is around. I'm just having a good time just making fun of my dog. Like,
you little fucking idiot.
Yep. I'm like, oh, you're so dumb. You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do it constantly. As far as making jokes, I feel like – I make jokes for myself and I –
in all contexts.
In all contexts. And I just really hope
– and sometimes they're funny to other people.
That someone gives me the gift of laughter.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's also how I operate.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, mostly I'm amusing myself. That's sort of my
– I try to always deliver that gift Whenever somebody makes a joke, unless it's one of those weird ones, it's, you know, problematic.
Yep.
Yep.
I will give it a good, I will give it a good chuckle.
Yep.
Because you got to think, like, if you don't laugh at someone's joke, what have you done?
Well, so there's actually been, there's a bunch of psychology research on this. The question is, why do people laugh at stuff or not laugh at stuff? And the reality is that laughter is much more a social cue that you like a person than it is that you think or think it's funny, which is why when I watch stand-up comedy, most of the time I'm like, this shit is not funny at all. But everybody in the audience is just losing.
They're just in it.
Because they're there to see this. They've paid money to see this person. They're excited to see this person. And that's sort of what you do in that context, right?
Maybe a good example is like, think about the best joke you know. And think about the worst person you know telling that joke.
Yeah.
And think, would I laugh at that?
Absolutely not.
No, you would not.
Or here's another one. If you're so like one of the things when I was originally dating my wife, one of the reasons I knew she liked me was because I was telling genuinely bad jokes.
Uh-huh.
And she was laughing very hard at all of them. And I was like, this is
It's a test.
Suspicious. It's a joke.
If you need to test whether people like you, just tell some very medium jokes and see
if they give you a little just
and it's generally really good social practice to test all of your relationships.
Yeah. Absolutely. You want to make sure and you got to keep a scorecard.
Yep.
You got to know
logs.
Who's laughed how many times?
And and you want a multi-part rating system. You don't just want one of these bullshit likes 1 to 10 how good is it? You know, you need to rate it on all the metrics.
Yeah.
Trust what else is there?
You should use romantic comedy scale. So it's like, how much has a person been really creepy towards you? But like in a way
in a
that's kind of endearing
that is
somehow.
Endearing somehow.
Yeah.
If looked at through the
particular lens. And then leave that journal, just leave it out in the open. You know, it's like a coffee table book. So when friends come over.
You always got to leave relationship landmines just kind of sprinkled throughout.
And that way it's kind of like it's a leaderboard, right? So your friends, everyone knows where they're placed, you know, like relative.
Oh, yeah.
In your
it's important. It's important for maintaining good quality relationships that you're very honest about the numerical scale on which all your friends land.
Yeah. What's your gear score, for being my friend?
For being a friend.
Where's it at? You know, I need those algorithms.
And of course, you want to make sure also that you establish what the criteria are for people to elevate their points, you know, so that
they buy gifts for you. How many points is that worth?
Right.
What if the gift isn't something that you like though? Does that give negative points?
Mm-hmm. You know, it sure does. Probably. And of course, if they watch after your dog, that's a big one. If they help you move, that's like 100 points right there.
Yeah. I think you can't even offset those points for like a year, I think.
No.
Yeah. You're locked in at maximum friend level.
Yep.
So, you know, that's just a few little pro tips there on managing your friendships and relationships.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go. All right. Next question comes from Maximilio. What should I pursue in education if I am interested in game development, especially indie game development? I'm majoring in computer science, but I'm still trying to choose a minor or double major.
Business.
And try to choose between math, creative writing, new media, business.
There you go.
Or even self-building a minor out of my own by just choosing my own classes. What are the most important classes that you can take in school?
Depends on how good the classes are. Because a class, just because it's called math, doesn't mean you're going to learn math by having to.
I think less about
class.
This in terms of the specifics of class choice.
Yes.
And more about
the kind
saying,
of knowledge that you need.
Yeah. How much and what kind of knowledge?
Business, statistics.
Some of that. Get some of that in there.
Yeah. No matter what your career is, knowing about business and statistics will help you because everything you go into will be a business. That's where your income is going to come from.
Yep.
It's from that business.
And everything that happens to you in your life is dictated by statistics.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good one.
So you should know. You should know how to not be taken advantage of, which is where the statistics comes from.
And business.
And that's where the business comes from.
There's another idea, which is the idea of a double or triple threat, which is that you don't have to be the best at any one thing if you're also kind of good at some other things.
How bad can you be at how many things and still be – like can you be like an – so if you can be a triple threat, can you be like an
– Well, there's a ratio.
Like
so you can be really bad at 39 things and you're fucking great.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can do 39 things.
You can do 39 things real badly.
Well, I mean, you got to do good enough, right? But I think that's the point. It's like
I can play the recorder. I can ride a bike whilst I can do a wheelie just for a moment.
Yeah. Which might come in handy for some reason later on. You can ride a unicycle.
I can ride a unicycle. Not well.
But you can.
But I can.
Can you still?
Probably.
No, I can still.
Is it like riding a bike?
I don't think it's like riding a bike.
I can still ride a unicycle badly.
Okay. So that's going to always be
just
true.
Like how I always could.
Yeah. So I think there's a benefit there, which is having that broad education during this time where you basically can do whatever you want is good.
Yes.
But definitely tap into business, get some stuff going there, get the stats. And then beyond that, pick up some other skill where when you add it into the mix of your comp sci degree makes you interesting because of the mix. So, for example, if it's comp
sci. Design would be good.
Yeah, if it's comp sci and design or comp sci and creative writing or just something that's completely sort of else.
Something,
if
you can, something that's less engineering oriented and more
creative. Yeah, if you can only do one thing, you will be perpetually subject to the whims of randomness.
Yeah, and other people.
Yeah. So if you specialize 100% in a really specific thing and you've got no other interests or skills, then once that thing is no longer in demand, you are no longer in demand and you're done now.
Yep.
Now you got to figure your shit out and it's hard. Yep. So what was that quote in the personal MBA?
The one in the opening? Oh, if you're –
there's a book called The Personal MBA, which is about just business, which you should just read that anyway.
Yeah,
just read even it. If you don't do a business major.
Maybe do that instead of a business major.
Yeah, do that.
But it would be more cost effective, definitely.
Yeah. It's called – the quote was, life is tough. It's tougher if you're stupid.
Yeah.
So
– so learn some things.
Learn some things.
Now, I'm not even sure that that's a true quote.
Well, I think it's about right. It's got a truth to it. It's truthy.
I think it's true for some people, I think.
Yeah. So, business is great. Math is great. Statistics is great. Do one or all of those things and you'll be in a better spot.
Yeah. But I mean, get something that's not math oriented too in there. Cause like the reality is if you
do triple major, do a quadruple major.
Just learn stuff. Well,
the fact is, if you can already write well, then
fine. Yeah.
Oh, but please. If you can't write well, then that is the only thing you're thinking about.
Yeah. That's learn how to read.
Learn how to fucking read.
I'm not even kidding. Like people think they can read, they cannot read.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like
you're just looking at words.
If your reading comprehension is not above like 90% when you're reading something, figure out how to get your reading comprehension above 90%. Because what that means is you're spending time not actually learning things when you're trying to learn things.
Yeah. And you know what else?
It makes everything else harder.
Learn how to type.
Yes. Learn how to talk too.
What is this? What is this 70 words per minute nonsense? You got to be 50 above that.
Go
least.
To typeracer.com. Just type,
and just go
every day. 10 minutes a day. Just start racing people online by typing.
If as a programmer, as a business person, whatever, everything that you do is going to end up having to get typed into a computer.
It's actually funny. There's these fundamentals of life, right? Which to me are they're reading, writing, typing,
and chopping onions.
Chopping onions. And speaking. Right?
Yeah.
Those are your five core skills. I would say if you know that you have a deficiency in one of those areas.
Actually, you do. You do at least at least one of these.
I'm sure
one of those.
It takes me a while to chop an onion. I do a good job.
I'm weak as fuck chopping onions right now. I really need to shorten.
Have you done, because we talked about this a couple episodes ago, have you looked up a video on how to use a chef's knife properly? No.
Because you suck at it.
Because it'll blow your mind.
Turns out.
Well, so I'm going to be making some spaghetti tomorrow. So,
yeah, dude,
I'm not
going
to chop the noodles, but I need to chop the vegetables
buddy.
In there. So,
chop the noodles.
The noodles you just take and you snap them like a spine.
But this is the thing.
Unless you cook them first, then you got to cut them. Because you can't snap them once they're cooked.
I can. You can snap them like a whip.
You whip them in half.
But anyways, point being, there are things that people do all day, every day. Read, write, type. Chop onions.
They're also foundational to be able to do all – because like, okay, if you're going to take a stats course but you suck at writing and reading.
You can't
learn
anything.
So look up books on speed reading, on reading comprehension. Yep. That's going to be hard because you got to read those books in order to learn how to – it's
a whole little bit of a circular problem.
But if you're in college, there's usually resources where you can go for these things.
Yep.
So I mean like go take advantage of the resources that are available. There's usually writing tutors that are given either for free or super low cost on college campuses. If you know you're a little weak on writing, go do it.
I don't know if I told you guys. I started messing around on Typeracer, and I've gotten my words per minute up to 130.
Nice.
With like 99.8% accuracy.
That's ridiculous.
I'm going to shoot for 150, but I don't know about the physics of that.
That's like court stenographer level.
Yeah, at what point does the keyboard just catch on fire?
Probably around there.
Mm-hmm.
Around there.
Or even not be able to take inputs fast enough. Because you know how if you hit like three, because every keyboard has a limit on how many keys you can hit at the same time. But it's
the
just
mechanical
like,
keyboards have like 20 or something.
Yeah,
you can just go to town on those things. But anyways,
goal should be to type so fast that the keyboard can't keep.
Well, here's the thing. Like they talk about this, whether you're doing art practice or programming, whatever else, there's always this reference that experts give to the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Someone be like, I can't figure out what the problem here. And they're like, you need to revisit the fundamentals.
Yep.
And I think there's the fundamentals of life, which are those things.
What was it again?
It was reading, writing, speaking, chopping onions.
Yep. Typing.
Okay.
So focus on those five are fundamentals.
Every so often, if you haven't, yeah, if you haven't picked up those skills,
if you're good at those, everything else is
this easy. Actually reminds me a lot of Queer Eye.
Yeah.
Where they've got their core things.
They do.
You know, you've got your space. You've got your
culture.
Your community. Mm-hmm. You know, the cultural stuff.
Self-care.
Yep.
Grooming.
I think the culture stuff seems to be chopping just onions, about obviously. Making people cry, though.
The culture – well, I guess that's the point. Yeah. Culture is actually
– Crumb is always like
– Crumb is like, get your cries out.
Yeah, I just identified your deepest, darkest
– Yeah. Problem. In like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So
fucking deal with it, buddy. Yeah. Deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Bring it out in the open. Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
That's true. And Anthony comes in and he's like, I'm going to show you how to chop an onion because that's one of the fundamentals of it. Right?
They aren't teaching a lot of typing on Queer
There's Eye, not though. A lot of typing.
No.
What's that about?
They need to have
it's not the fundamentals of a business life. You know what I mean?
There's like, yeah, there's your personal area, and then there's like getting shit done.
Yeah, that's true. They're not about getting shit done.
They're going really into the fundamentals, which is like you got to be able to like
can you feed shave yourself?
And feed yourself.
Yeah.
Can you show up in a way that's good for other people?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Then
and
you
and the next level is typing.
It's typing.
Chopping onions and typing.
Yeah. Chopping onions and typing.
Get on it.
All right. Next question comes from Captain Jazz. What was your favorite book or series you read during your childhood? My favorite was Dune by Frank Herbert. Took a while to read, but it was worth it.
You read that as a child?
I didn't read that until I was in college.
That's intense. It's an intense child reading situation.
But again, reading is important. It's one of the fundamentals. It's
very important.
I feel like we read so fucking much as kids.
Books.
There's nothing that I can.
We had our 30 minutes of screen time, and otherwise we had to be in the woods. So the third option was to read, which we opted for most of the time.
Yep. Well, we were in the woods a lot too.
Yeah, we were reading in the woods quite a bit.
What did we read as kids?
I mean, just all the things.
I read a lot of books. Yeah,
we also like when we were younger because we had the entire Goosebumps series.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a few episodes ago.
Yeah,
which Goosebumps is the one I remember.
Of course, the Golden Compass, or I guess His Dark Materials trilogy.
That is so good,
top notch.
Yeah,
and that holds up no matter what fucker mm-hmm, you are. Mm-hmm. And it's now a TV show. That the first episode is pretty good.
Yeah,
really. I will say I was in seventh grade when Harry Potter first came onto the scene.
I didn't read Harry Potter until I was in college.
Did you actually read all the books?
No, I read the first three.
So I was in third or fourth grade. I read the first one and I was like, whatever.
I read them until they started making movies and I'm like,
yes, I saw all the movies.
I'll
just
go this route. This is going to save me a lot of time.
I think I saw all but the last movie.
I think they released the Goblet of Fire book and I saw how big it was, I was like, I'm
a child. I got things to do.
I got Pokemon to catch.
And I think most of the books that I really like and really remember in series and stuff are things that I started reading in college and later. And there's not a lot from my childhood. I know there's a lot that definitely had an impact on me in my childhood, but I can't remember any specifically. Except for the His Dark Materials trilogy. But that's the
– Yeah, I didn't read that one until college, actually.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, though. I cried like a baby at the end of it.
Yeah. That's so good.
Nice. So is that recommended?
Yes.
Nice.
100% recommended.
So there you go. All right. Next question comes from Jumpy Lumpa Leapilo. During dinner, my family plays a game I'd like to share with you called Would You Rather?
Oh.
If you'll indulge me and all of us fans, let's play.
Okay.
P.S. If this is popular, would you do this at the end of each episode? No promises.
Yeah, I love that.
All right.
Saying no promises to me.
Which is a great way of saying no. All right. All right. First, would you rather? Would you rather have a lifetime supply of your choice of candy or a life-size living flux made of that candy?
The latter, because there's a lot of science implications
of that one.
Yeah.
A living organism made out of candy.
Well, here's a point, which is if you have infinite of a particular thing that is your favorite, it is likely to become
your least favorite.
Not long.
But there's actually an advantage to that too, which is specifically candy. Well, you can also but there's an infinite supply. Actually, you control the supply, so it's fine. But
you're like the diamond.
But if it's your favorite candy, then this is also the thing most likely to cause you diabetes. So now you have infinite of it, which means you're either now definitely going to get diabetes, or you're going to grow so tired of it that now you definitely won't get diabetes.
I think the deeper, darker question here is where is this candy coming from and how are you summoning it?
How is it infinite?
Are you, much like Spider-Man, shooting it out of your wrists?
Or, amazing.
Which I'd be very into.
Do you cry this candy? Are there Cadbury mini eggs coming out of your tear ducts? Do you sneeze it?
Does it just show up in a particular location? In which case, that becomes a government interest very quickly.
Yeah.
Because you've got a candy mine.
yeah,
in your house.
Our mysterious individuals just drop whatever your needs are, they just show up and hand you.
Is it a magic piece, or is there some principle of physics being exploited that we could then learn from and use it for storing infinite of other things?
Maybe everywhere you go, you leave a trail of candy.
Now, I will now say,
like a witch, like a from Hansel and Gretel, yeah, or a slug.
They do. It does say a lifetime supply, which I don't like the framing of, because the way that that companies always do a lifetime supply is they say, well, we're going to give you a lifetime supply of Pop-Tarts.
And, based on how much the average person should eat.
Yeah. And you don't need more than one box of Pop-Tarts every 2 weeks.
And you say, you don't tell me.
And we're going to look at – yeah. And they're like, we're going to now look at our actuarial tables and figure out your estimated time of death.
And you're like, this got much less sexy all of a sudden.
That's how many dark Pop-Tarts you get. And now it turns out you only got 35 Pop-Tarts.
But this is actually interesting, because now you know, when you're going to die. You know what I mean?
It's true. Once you're out of Pop-Tarts, you're dead now.
So you can now use those as a calendar to now wrap your life around your
no death. So you would take the lifetime supply, because that actually would tell you your death date, which means you can plan much more.
You know what this reminds me of?
Does that also mean if you just don't eat it, you're immortal now?
Yeah, because what this reminds me of is in the Warcraft universe, Sylvanas Windrunner, who is a banshee who's found her body and put her soul back into her body.
Good
as
move.
We all know.
Good move, Sylvanas.
In order to reinforce her immortality.
Was her body all gross and rotten when she did that? Or?
It was, but I think some CGI happened to it, and then nice, it got better. So what she did is she went and found these 9 Valkyrs, which are essentially angelic beings from the Shadowlands.
Obviously. Makes sense.
And they swore an oath to her where anytime she's killed, one of them reinfuses her life essence with theirs. So she essentially has 9 lives like a cat.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Convenient.
So much like these Pop-Tarts, you have to be very protective of them.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to, this is the source of your power.
It's like
now,
the Portrait of Dorian Gray sort of situation.
What if rats get to your Pop-Tarts? Actually, if you get harmed, are you fine, but your Pop-Tarts go away?
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a mass.
Like if you get
you have a lifetime
accident,
supply of Pop-Tarts, your Pop-Tarts aren't gone now, so you can't be killed. Yeah. But
it's only happened once. So like maybe you get in a car accident that should have killed you, all of your Pop-Tarts are now gone, but you're fine? Is that?
Yeah.
But now you're just going to live until you die.
Yeah. Are you going to take the risk of maybe opening an Airbnb and having someone rustle through your cabin?
I think the way it works is, like, you're always dying. You know what I mean? Like, you're always kind of slowly dying, which means you have like a rate of death points that you're kind of accruing over time. So every Pop-Tart is worth one of these units of life.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, if you get hit by a car, it's going to knock your life points down enough that you can't quite recover. So you got to figure out the exchange rate of Pop-Tarts to pain, you know, the Pop-Tarts to injury ratio, and that's what you use. You hit by a car, that's about 18 Pop-Tarts, I would say, probably.
That's not
maybe at least 18 boxes of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. That's probably true. That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends. You get hit by a car.
Well, it depends on what kind of Pop-Tart, because like the blueberry ones. The s'mores ones are so good.
If it's like one box of s'mores.
Pop-Tart, oh, man. So there you go.
Yep.
That's how that works. All right. Would you rather –
I want to say, we used to play this game called Zabmondo as kids. Remember this?
Oh, what was
– it's a would you rather game.
Yeah.
That has all sorts of just horrible would you rather scenarios for you.
Yeah, it's like would you rather drink a cup of something disgusting or like –
or eat a cup of something disgusting. It's usually what it came down to.
Or be stabbed.
And I don't even remember how you won. I don't even know how that was a game.
I think everybody had to vote or something or –
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah. And then, there's something like that. But it's a very fun – I think it's still around. Zabmondo is what it's called. Super fun. So if this is a game you like to play at dinner, you can play it.
Play some Zabmondo.
Yeah.
All right. We got 2 more of these. 1, would you rather have the power of invisibility or flight?
We just talked about this last episode.
It's the classic.
We didn't actually answer it though, except for I did, which is obviously flight.
Yeah. It kind of depends on the parameters. Like if you had to just blindly pick without knowing the constraints.
Yeah, assuming that you can just be invisible as much as you want or you can just fly as much as you want. If that's where the things are.
As deep as we go.
Flight.
Right. Then flight, definitely. Because then there's the problem there is the limits.
I feel like you'd be regulated by the FCC.
You're too small though. You know, it also depends on how fast you can fly.
They're regulating drones.
But here's the thing. Even if you only fly like a foot off the ground, you don't have to walk anymore.
Yeah.
That's fucking
but
great.
You got to be careful. Huge,
you got to be careful about not banging into people who are, you know, segwaying down the sidewalk.
Yeah. Which is effectively what you're doing.
But also, you know, walking is like your primary form of exercise actually, right?
There is that. But you can still walk. Because here's the other thing. Is the most annoying
part. Would you? You know what I mean?
Well, how many calories does flying take though? It might take six or seven.
Yeah, because you have to, because there has to be something being shot out of you in order to fly, right?
Yeah.
So like that's going to cost calories. I think the problem
is you're expelling mass or energy.
Every time we get into the specifics of flight, it just seems like it's gross and a bad idea.
And also, you would suffocate if you went too high.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you'd get a severe wind burn, or you would hit a goose.
Or get hit by a goose.
Yeah.
A very angry goose.
But no, when I say hit a goose, I mean you would just gently fly past the goose and flap just to give it a good slap.
But this also means that you could catch a goose or any flying animal.
Yeah.
And so now you have an infinite supply of food.
Mm-hmm.
But you already got all those Pop-Tarts, so I mean, you're fine.
Are we in the same universe
yeah,
right
obviously
now?
Obviously, okay. All of these questions build on each other.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Now that you've got an infinite supply of life-giving Pop-Tarts,
okay.
Would you rather have the power of invisibility or flight? The
question is really, what can you do with invisibility?
With invisibility, all you can do is illegal and creepy stuff.
That's yeah. That's
like
kind of what I get.
Yeah. So I think if you're a creep, then like that's
or if you want to do like, you know, like corporate espionage.
That's what I'm saying. Illegal or creepy stuff.
Well, yeah.
Or be a freaking spy. Because now it's legal. It's fine.
Creepy stuff.
But it's not illegal, but it's creepy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but
invisibility
it's for your country, so it's fine now.
Yep.
That's how that works.
Invisibility is for creeps and fanatics.
Mm. And flight is for people who need to be somewhere.
Yeah. And I need to be places all the time.
You want to go check out the new restaurant? Just fly
just
over there.
Just go over there.
I imagine that if you just
I
flight,
hate traffic.
Exactly. That's the thing. Yeah. Right? You get to get rid of the most – it's like outside of all the stuff we talked about in the last episode about how we're all going to die. Yeah. But otherwise, the deepest scourge on humanity
– traffic.
Except for all the being about to die stuff is traffic.
Yeah.
So you just so get there's to
like,
skip it.
It's like nuclear Armageddon and then traffic.
Yeah, I think the thing you don't think about though when it comes to flight – is the architectural options that open up when you don't have to worry about these damn legs having to get you from A to B.
Or like, worry about that falling could kill you. Because that's just
about,
off the table.
Think about a house structure if you could just sort of fly around but without having to flap a lot. Like we're not talking about wings, right? So if you're just levitating all over the place, that blows open what you could do architecturally.
Yeah.
Your roof is now – that's free real estate up there.
Well, you don't even need a door on the ground level.
That's true. You could get in through the top or a window.
It could be in a volcano shape. You go in there. And then you
can just have
around.
You can just have a tube that you just fly up, and now you're in your house now, right? Nobody else can get up there.
Your house is
think
flying.
Of the security implications.
Incredible.
Your house is nobody flying, can get or you. It's on very long stilts.
Yeah,
floods are no longer a problem.
Go warning proof.
You're up there now.
Boom.
Also, nuke proof because you see a nuke coming, you just fly away.
It's fine. Well, if you see it coming, you're blind now because you just looked at a nuke.
Yeah. There's that.
So, bad move.
Yeah,
fly away blind. That's not going to go well for anybody.
Fly. Yeah.
But even if you can only fly, just like basically hover, just off the ground and very slowly. Now you don't have friction. So somebody can just push you. You know what I mean?
Drift.
You just drift somewhere, which is also dangerous if you can't stop dangerous. Flying.
What if you fall asleep while flying and somebody pushes you into traffic?
Do you remain flying?
They just scoot you out there.
But I mean, I think it's the same problem you have if you fall asleep.
Sleepwalking becomes a huge problem.
Well, no, because it takes a lot of effort for somebody to throw you in front of traffic when there's gravity.
I think sleepwalking becomes much less of a problem if you're able to fly. Because the major problem with sleepwalking is that you fall down things or walk into things.
You could fly.
But now because you can get anywhere.
Think about what you could fly into on accident.
Yeah, think about how much trouble cats can get into.
Because they can fly.
Because they can basically fly. in the scale of inside of a house, right? They can get into
They're sort of like dog bats.
Yeah. So if you're trying to protect your pets,
uh-huh.
If you're trying to protect a dog from something that'll kill it, just keep it off the floor. Problem solved. If you're trying to keep a cat safe from things that'll kill it, you got to lock everything and you got to, you know, it becomes much more problematic.
And then they're also liquid, so they just skid in there somehow.
Yeah. They're like octopi.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. Final question. Would you rather have the ability to talk to trees or birds?
Ooh, I think the thing is no.
Neither.
Can you turn this on and off?
Yeah, right.
I hope so. Let's say yes. Yes.
Okay.
Because otherwise you'll just literally go insane.
I don't want to talk to trees because they are being constantly murdered just everywhere you go. People are taking like.
And what are you even going to say to them? Just like.
Well, but I think
I hope you've enjoyed being alive for a long time.
But I think that's the most interesting thing because as far as
trees can't see anything.
But here's the thing,
so they can't know jack shit.
I don't think so.
What do you think a tree's going
to
tell you?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to get at. Like as far as just the most alien thing to be able to communicate with, being able to communicate with a tree is much further away.
How is this phrased again?
Would you rather be able to talk to trees or birds?
You can already talk to both of those things.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Already can.
Maybe it doesn't specify that it can talk back to you.
That's true.
Well, let's say you can communicate with it.
Okay.
What would you choose?
Well, because the other way to interpret this question is that suddenly you're unable to talk to the other thing that you didn't pick. So like right now you can talk to both. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you could just choose and now you can't talk to the other one.
I would pick the ability to talk to birds because you can have a parrot.
Yeah.
You can communicate with it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Can you? They talk. They get it.
Oh, yeah.
They know.
Yeah.
They know what's happening.
They do.
All right. Next question comes from Irish Luck. I recently started a computer science major and I'm learning C++.
Ooh, of course. Gross.
All right. Here we go. I'm just thinking about C++.
You think about the gap between an education and a production environment? I know.
There are, to be fair, there are still.
Oh, there's plenty of good reasons.
There are places you can go use C++. Yes. It's just, why would you go
there? None of them are anywhere you'd want to be. All right. My question is, how do you fight the urge of spaghetti code? Is mild amounts of spaghetti okay? What type of sauce should I use for it?
Good question.
You should use refactor sauce.
There's a book called Clean Code.
Yes.
It's a cookbook for just spaghetti code.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do you fight the urge of spaghetti code? So this is actually, I think, this is a question of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you only ever make stuff for a class and you turn it in and it's done now and you can walk away. Then you just
nobody has to look at it. You don't have to look at it.
You just wiggle those noodles all over the place and nobody gives a shit. Get it working and
move on. Make it as noodly as you want.
Yeah. If you've had to work on the same project, so Levelhead is now something like 90,000 lines of code. If you've ever had to work on the same project for years with tens of thousands of lines of code.
Mm-hmm. Or collaborate with other people in real time.
You will very quickly lose the urge to create spaghetti code because those noodles keep coming up out of the underworld and slapping you across the face.
Yep. Yep.
It's horrible. I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, you just say, I'm going to – you become passionate about making the code clean and modular and flexible.
Yeah. But it's 100% because of the environment, right? So I think that the answer is that you will have much less of an urge to make spaghetti code when you're in a
production environment. When it matters.
Yeah. It's one of those unfortunate things about learning it through school versus on long-term projects is that the production part. Because most of software is actually about production. It's not even about programming. It's about how do you decide how to do things and how to organize it with other people and how do you store your information and how do you version control, all that kind of stuff. Like almost all of it is not even the programming, but all you learn in the context of a normal school background is just how do you code stuff?
Mm-hmm. In C++.
In C++.
Specific.
Which again, people use.
They do use
it. I hear.
They sure do.
I hear that people use it.
Mm-hmm. But you should learn Node.
Yeah, definitely.
Or –
really,
pretty much anything else.
I mean, I think more so than that, pick a project to actually work on just for your own sake that isn't in C++. It doesn't matter, frankly, what else.
Well, I mean, it is the case that C++, because that's what I learned first also, mm-hmm. and I'm really glad I did because it's not very fun because
– sort of builds up mental toughness.
It builds up mental toughness, and more importantly though, it forces you to actually have a real mental model about how stuff works. So there was an earlier question about what's the point of pointers, right? This is a thing that very early in – you can't even do C++ like past the earliest phase unless you know what pointers are and how to use them. And then when you move to other languages like Python and JavaScript – you can do stuff much faster with, even though you don't use them directly, you still are using them behind the scenes.
You know that they're happening.
Yeah. You have an understanding of what's actually going on in the background. So I'm still glad that I did it that way. But the best advice that I got, because we're all self-taught. I was self-taught in programming. The best advice I got when I asked a friend of mine who was a comp sci major, who was probably the smartest guy that I knew in college, who then went off and he was like working for the NSA and doing all this shit.
He's got all your data now.
I told him, after college, and I was like, hey, I want to learn programming. What would you recommend as like a pipeline? Because I'd never been able to get into it. And he said, you should start with C++, find something with an interesting project so you can like force your way through it. And then the moment you feel like you can code something up, like you feel like you get it, you know, not like as an expert or anything even close to that, but like you feel like, okay,
You get a rough mental model,
and you couldn't do anything, but you can do a bunch of little stuff, right? The moment you get there, go pick something like Python.
Jettison that C++.
Get a programming language that's meant for you to build things quickly and easily.
Right, because the best way to learn programming and also learn how to be in production environments, all this kind of stuff, is to be able to make things fast that do things.
It's a practice discipline.
Mm-hmm. And if you're focused too much on the like just how does this talk to the machine and how do I make the machine do what I want and so on, instead of how do I create an algorithm that turns this piece of data into this piece of data or gives this user this experience or whatever, then you're learning computer science, which is really cool and interesting, but you're not learning how to make stuff.
Yes. Yeah, you don't want to mistake a computer science degree for being a programmer.
No, they're not even close to the same thing.
So make sure that you don't trick yourself into thinking that you are a programmer because you've learned about computer science. Being a programmer is...
Computer science helps you to be a better programmer because you have a better understanding of just why it is that
things work
programming the works the way that it does.
But it's a multiplier.
Yeah.
So if your programming skill is zero and then you multiply it times 100 because you know all about computer science,
it doesn't matter.
You still can't make a functioning piece of software, right? So being a programmer is all about learning about the craft of programming, and that's where things like making clean code comes in and learning how to create software architecture that's very modular and easy to use and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Also, use Git because you won't be afraid of refactoring.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Just use Git. College students in particular don't ever pick it up.
I can't tell you how many computer science majors I have met who have never used Git, which
it's
is
the first
wild.
Question to
and
ask.
Often not heard of it. Yeah.
First question to ask, because to me, it 100% assesses.
It's about production.
Yeah, it 100% assesses.
Are you on the academic side?
The quality
or
of your education.
Yeah, or are you on the actually building stuff side?
Well, yeah, because the wild part about it, too, is that in basically every computer science course I've ever heard of, there's like some project at the very end of it that takes, a few weeks to put together. And sure, it's a few weeks of college time, so it's like a few hours actually, right? But even still, you're spending hours and hours and hours on a project. And the fact that it's not version controlled.
Yeah.
Like that's the most – It's the most horrifying thing.
I can't imagine putting 30 minutes into a project and not committing
if I start writing a script that I think is going to be a one-off and it takes me more than 10 minutes, then I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, better make a repo.
Yeah, I make a repo for it. It's in Git now.
Because what you also don't know is what if you want to revisit this thing later and where will it be?
Where is it?
It's in my repositories where everything is.
Yep.
Of course. All right. Next question comes from Jim Zombie Brainsock, who says, what are your favorite game design books? And what is the most memorable game design lesson you ever learned?
I have not enjoyed a game design book. So that's the short answer.
Have you ever read one?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
I read The Book of Lenses, which I thought was like, fine.
We were just talking about this. Because I was looking at a bookshelf behind me here, and it's on there. And I was like, have you guys read this? And you guys are both like, yeah. And I tried to read it and I was.
I tried to find some other ones and I read like the intros to a bunch to like see if I could find one that I just haven't found one that I actually liked.
Yeah.
I think the Book of Lenses is really good early.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So if you don't have much experience at all, Game Design of Book of Lenses by Jesse Schell. Very good. Very good. Because it gives you like a really
Jesse
high
Schell
level.
Of Schell Games, which is one of the few long-term surviving small studios.
They're not small. I think they're 100 people now.
Are they that big now?
Yeah. They got big.
They used to be small.
They're doing all sorts of cool stuff. Yeah. They do a mix of contract work, VR stuff, and then their own projects too. So, and their team is phenomenal. He's obviously got his shit together and knows some stuff. So the book is really good in terms of giving you a really high-level overview of all this stuff. But once you're really – I think this is one of those problems that you get as you get further into any particular discipline is that it's harder and harder to
practice
to dig up the particular knowledge you need.
Yeah.
You sort of have to wade through stuff. And I think
it's because it could become so context dependent. You know? Like what does it mean – like what is game design in a general sense when you can make a first-person shooter or a puzzle?
Yes.
You know, like those don't follow
– Yeah, I will say I very much enjoyed – I did the Will Wright Masterclass. I think it's like $80.
That's on like masterclass.com or whatever.
Yeah. And honestly, like it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Very good overview of everything. Very engaging. And there's a little workbook that goes with it. That's fun. And it's very well produced. If you want to get an entire education of game design, just pay $80 and do that. Yeah. I don't know about going to school for it necessarily, but do that because it's a good high level overview. And yes, it's toward his angle of simulation games, but it's got some really good sort of nuggets in it for thinking. But yeah, I haven't really read a...
What about just like a general lesson?
I think
lesson.
Design in general is probably better than focusing on game design.
What about just like a general lesson, like a big takeaway? If somebody's getting into game design or game development, like what's a fundamental thing?
The fundamental truth is that any one thing you put in your game is way more complicated than you could possibly imagine.
Yes. it's the door problem. If you just search the door problem and read that.
Yes. Also,
that's a good just like – that doesn't teach you how to design. It teaches you why design is really complicated in an interactive medium like video.
And I can tell you almost all the problems we've had, even in a production context with Levelhead, have been because we didn't take the door problem seriously enough, which is sort of a high-level overview.
You're just like, we'll just add this in here and then –
There is no just.
There is no just. Yeah, that's the shortest way to put it. And so I think that the door problem is basically just – it's this idea that if you said, there's doors in this game, the job of a designer is to answer the resulting literal thousand of questions about those doors and how they interact with everything.
Especially people who are just getting into game design or think that that's what they want to do. They're thinking of the side where you'd be like, oh, I want to have doors in my game.
This is the difference between a designer and an idea person.
Right. Yes.
And those are not the same thing. And nobody needs the idea person. That's not a that's not a job out there, really. Right. Yeah. But the designer's role is not what everybody seems to think that it is, which is like, I came up with the idea and then people go figure out how to do it. It's like, no.
Well, what are you doing in the meantime?
How to do it.
Eating nachos?
Yeah.
That's not a job. No,
your job as a designer is to answer every single fucking question.
Yeah.
To the tiniest level of detail.
Yep.
And then basically you have to make the decision between the various the fact that essentially you can't get everything you want.
Yeah.
So most often we have this discussion
to understand the production limitations.
Yeah. We have this discussion a lot in Levelhead now because the game is so robust and so big that anytime we get a feature request or even a change, the reality of the result of it is usually choosing between two things that are equal – but produce different types of bad outcome in some scenarios.
And they'll both add something good and then would also produce something bad.
And you have to, as a designer, be able to parse those and say, what are you trying to get out of this game and make the decision on that. And the reality is that what you end up with at the end of the day, that's why I think the idea of clones is interesting, because even if you start off like trying to clone a game, if you make a couple different decisions, especially early on, it's a cascading branching tree, right? And so you end up with a game that actually feels fundamentally different, even if it pulls from the same mechanical base. I think it's kind of
I think mine is the lesson that it took me a while to learn is to recognize the difference between making games for yourself and making games as a professional, right? So
in what way?
So if you're making a game for yourself, then you are doing it such that you're not thinking about who it's for. You're only focused on the things that you like. And you're overly concerned with whether or not you are enjoying the kind of thing that you are making.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you're also probably overly dismissive of the kinds of feedback that you get.
Right, because you're personally emotionally invested in this thing because you love the thing.
Well, yeah, and also you don't care what other people think. I mean, you do, of course, but
not really.
But it won't impact your decisions, because then when you hear that, you're just like, oh, well, you're wrong. This isn't for you.
Yeah, and it wasn't until I started working on games in a group setting that I started working on things that were other people's ideas. And I think early on I had this kind of thought process where it's like, I want to make my own stuff, and that's what it really means, is it like my ideas are in the game and I'm only making things that I'm personally passionate about. And I think the fact is, like, you don't really learn a lot doing that, because you're not
and you don't make a good thing.
You don't make very many good things. You have a lot of blind spots because you get hyper fixated on all the things that you love about it, and you are blind to the things that other people don't like about it. And it really, I think once Sam and I started working on things like Towel Fight. Mm-hmm. So Towel Fight 2 was inspired by Binding of Isaac. I'm not really a fan of that game.
Mm-hmm.
I played it for about an hour and I was like, it's fine, I guess, But Sam loved it. And we started working on Towel Fight, and I had no opinions about what kind of game this was supposed to be. I was just evaluating it for what it was. And I think that helped a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And when we went into Quadrupus,
it allows it to sort of grow into something.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, and I think it's the case that any game that we make, it's possible that one of us is particularly excited or passionate about this kind of game, but it's more likely that at least one or more of us don't really care that much about like this kind of a game.
Mm-hmm.
We made arcade games, we've made RPGs, we've made top-down shooters, and now we've got this platformer. These are all totally different genres of game, and it's actually very beneficial for us to have people on the team who aren't like super passionate about arcade shooters or whatever the case may be, because then they bring
Better feedback.
Yeah, they bring better feedback, they bring a critical eye, and the product turns out better because they know why they don't like that kind of a thing, and you can work to mitigate those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a good lesson.
It's not about you.
It's not about you. It's about the experience that you're trying to deliver.
Well, yeah, we see this too. Even talking to – so anytime I go to smaller conventions that are mostly indies who haven't actually gotten out of product yet, but who have something. They're getting ready to go. And well, well, these conversations were just where I always ask, oh, like, where, you know, where are you going to put this when it's done? And the answer is always, oh, I'm going to put it on Steam. I'm like, okay, cool. Where else? And they're just like, oh, no, just Steam. You know, I'm like, you know, you can't make any money there, right? Like, what? And I even had somebody basically argue with me that if you put it anywhere else, this was one of those guys who was like really into his game, you know, if you put it anywhere else, it would reduce the quality of the game because it was like really only designed for PC. And I'm looking at this game, it looks like a mobile game, right? But I made this for PC users.
You gotta remove your damn ego from the thing, you know, like it. Sometimes you just make something that needs
especially because someone's gonna guarantee failure, right? So in the case, especially if you're doing all this stuff and all you care about is that the game matches exactly what you want it to be, and you make it for PC because to you a PC game is like the pillar of what a game is, and then you finally get the thing done and it's not possible to be successful in that market because the market's shifting around you. Like at any given moment, maybe 3 months from now, hopefully, it'll still be possible to be successful on Steam, right? Or it'll become possible again. I mean, but. Probably, maybe it won't be.
Well, the thing is, it is certainly possible to be successful.
It is, right? Yes.
What's the likelihood?
Right? The idea of just putting a game on, like that word again, just putting a game on Steam.
And refusing to go everywhere else because of like some ideas you have about what that makes it look like.
Well, and also like, if somebody comes up to you and their first question is like, oh, is this going to be on Android or whatever? Then you should be like, yeah.
Right? If that's the read.
That's what it looks like to them. And that means that's where they expect to be able to find it. That's where they're going to look for it. That's where if other people are on Android, they would see it. And they'd be like, oh, this feels right. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that to kind of sum that whole thing up, it's kind of like the kill your darlings, but it's just like don't fall in love with the thing that you're making to the point where you can no longer look at it objectively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It also means you never finish it. Yeah. If you love it too much.
Wait, it means what?
You'll never finish it if you love it too much.
Yeah, because it'll never quite
– it won't live up to your belief.
Well, and you'll end up in this kind of self-handicapping phase where like you'll know that as soon as you release it, people will review it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. People, and now they're reviewing you as a person.
And some of them will not like it and you became so personally invested in the – like emotionally invested in the success of this thing that you can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. And so instead you will postpone and delay and tweak it forever and ever and ever and just never move on. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So don't do any of that.
So don't do it.
Yeah.
Any final words?
Nope.
This wraps up our question blitz.
Episode back-to-back spree.
That was, I enjoyed that.
It was a good time.
That was good.
It was good.
We could really do another one, but I think it's time to go do other things.
It's time. I'm getting a little hoarse. I'm going to go buy a little horse.
A little horse? Yeah.
So you guys want to come with and want to go pick them out later on?
That's why we can't do another episode.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Costa, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. We've got links to the community Discord and a whole bunch of other stuff. So just go there and do those things. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.